Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 2:41 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is April 4th. I thought we'd kick off with copper because it's up 8 cents and pushing back up towards that $5 level. But it hasn't really gone anywhere for the last year, and that has caused a lot of disquiet among the bulls, and then among the bears, they're calling it a top. So if we then just look at where are we? Relative to where the historic peaks are, then this continues to look like a consolidation in the region of the all-time peaks. But the bears are going to be looking back at what happened in 2011, and they're going to say, well, we had a post-credit crisis rebound that took us to new all-time highs, and it didn't last. And we had some big downward dynamics, and then it crashed lower, then gave up just about all of the post-pandemic rally over the next 5 years. And that's what they're anticipating again. So some people are assuming that we're going to move into a less benign growth outlook, that the promises made about infrastructure development aren't going to be realized, and that there's going to be a surfeit of copper ultimately because some supply is being held off the market by private investors. So that would be conventional thinking. Then the bigger point is, and I guess it really does revolve around first, the drive towards renewables, the promises made at the COP26. A conference last year were very ambitious and then quickly forgotten when politicians got home. Then Russia invades Ukraine and brings home to everybody the dangers of relying on an autocrat for complete reliance on energy. And everyone has been happy to rely on autocratic regimes for the last 40 years, and not least because places like Iran or the Middle East, generally, they haven't been bastions of democracy or liberalism, but they've been extremely reliable in providing supply since the 1970s. And of course, in the 1970s, it was the Middle Eastern regimes were those that really kicked up a fuss and created a massive spike in oil prices as well, and contributed to inflationary prices. Since then, they've become much more reliable in terms of supply. But Europe in particular is now waking up to the reality that they need to start to pioneer energy independence. And the only way they're going to achieve that is by substituting copper for oil. So they're going to be investing in more wind, in more solar. They should probably be looking at more uranium. We can see that Samsung is going to be soon developing the first ship to be a large ship to be powered by ammonia, which is basically hydrogen. So lots of these types of innovations are occurring. And with the intention of Russia to try and control much of Europe, and then also basically giving up on its existing customers with a view to developing growth markets like the emerging markets, India and China, then they're basically giving up on Europe. And of course, the other point is that developed economies use less oil per capita, and their absolute consumption of oil products has been falling. So it's become a progressively more competitive environment. Even though Russia has a dominant position, they've been willing to just give it up in return for trying to exploit, or gain market share in emerging markets. Europe, however, is going to be forced to try and achieve energy independence, and copper is a big part of that. So we're at an interesting point here because the arguments are balanced. Because we've seen that the yield curve spread has become inverted, and we're starting to see that banks are underperforming. And when we see an inverted yield curve, that's generally a pretty reliable indicator of a future recession. And we can also think about the banking sector, particularly in the USA. And it's broken downwards. And it wasn't following through on the downside in here today, but this is not a good looking chart where we have the failed upside breaks above 450, then the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. This looks like a first step below the peak, and until proved otherwise, that has to be the base case. So we're seeing that one of the I guess the most bearish factors for copper would be a recession in major economies. And obviously, with what's going on in China right now, with the rising number of coronavirus cases, particularly in a major city like Shanghai, but also in Fujian and Jilin, that's contributing to angst about the sustainability of Chinese growth. On top of that, they have a new variant, which is even more transmissible. So obviously, that's also weighing on sentiment. It does increase the potential that the Chinese administration will have to ease up and provide additional assistance. So the renminbi was a little weaker in here today, or I guess this was really Friday. This is tomb sweeping, so it's a holiday in China right now, and tomorrow as well. It's reasonable to anticipate, though, that the renminbi should depreciate, but perhaps not in as aggressive a manner as we've seen in the past. The Chinese are eager to buy commodities in their own currencies. Russia is eager to sell commodities in its own currency, and there's a lot of questioning about the sustainability of the dollar as a reserve currency. And over the weekend, there was a lot more consideration about the fact that Russia is now accepting or is willing to buy gold at 5,000 rubles an ounce, which pretty much equates to where the price is right now. So that represents a floor under the market. So Russia is replenishing its reserves and buying gold. And they're basically using proceeds from oil sales in the gold market. So they're creating a link between oil and gold and attempting to create the impression that the currency is backed by gold. And that's certainly been one of the Russian tactics over the course of the last decade in order to, I think, prepare themselves for this invasion of Ukraine that's currently underway. Of course, there's a lot of speculation too that this is the beginning of the re-standardization of gold as the reserve asset. Well, it's a possibility, but there are a lot of other moving parts in the global economy as well. One thing that I find particularly interesting is that we had gold as the standard unit of account for millennia. Then, with the invention of the internal combustion engine and chemicals and plastic industries, oil became a store of value and a unit of account for assessing value. But as we look at the performance of the Fangman companies, and they've rebounded quite impressively. But it does, I think, highlight the value of data. So these companies have prospered beyond all expectations resulting from the introduction of 4G. And they're also part of the digitization of the global economy and some of the biggest beneficiaries of it. And this combination of these large eight companies has rebounded really rather impressively. And Tesla, in particular, was up in a very firm manner in here today because they beat expectations for deliveries. And of course, investors are also buying in anticipation of another stock split. And then Apple, what has been resilient throughout and has continued to bounce from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's coming back into the region of its all-time highs. Microsoft has also rebounded and broken its succession of lower rally highs, so this is an impressive bounce back above the 200-day moving average. So these companies also highlight the importance of data in the global economy. And at some point, it's reasonable to anticipate that there will be a commoditization of data, and that by using the value created within the economy, particularly through the digital economy, and how it's increasingly becoming part of the wider economy. I was chatting with some friends over the weekend. They've recently sold their company to Cargill, and what they were producing were sensors. And Cargill will be using those sensors on crops to monitor crops in real time. They anticipate increasing efficiency by upwards of 10%. And then when you start to take that kind of data and roll it out into the wider economy, the digitization effort is something that will promote productivity growth. So as we look at the value of assets, well, the dollar remains quite steady. But of course, the dollar is also a product of supply and demand. And at present, the supply of the currency is going to contract with quantitative tightening. And we've seen that in the past. During the last period of quantitative tightening between 2018 and the end of 2019, we've seen a significant advance in the dollar. And we're starting to see that again because on this occasion we have Japan, which is still wedded to its quantitative easing program and its yield curve control, and Europe, which is very reluctant to raise interest rates. You have China, which is facing significant challenges from trying to combat the coronavirus, maintain growth, and support the property developing sector. So that's likely to contribute to a weakening of their currency. Even if it's a modest downtrend, it is likely to trend lower rather than higher. And that leaves the dollar as a store of value. Now, ultimately, there's a lot of debt outstanding in the USA, and that will have to get dealt with eventually, and it'll probably necessitate higher taxes, but we're not quite there yet. So we have an inverted yield curve, and we have banks that are underperforming, and commodities continue to do well, and the technology sector has taken on a new lease of life. And then we can look at some of the less or the least profitable portion of the market, where the ARK Innovation ETF continues to rebound, and the Golden Dragon ETF was also in strongly positive territory in here today. China appears to be attempting to try and plot a middle road between Russia and NATO. So they made the concession. And when I was recording the audio on Friday, I was expressing doubt that they would do that, but they have gone ahead and they've given permission to the SEC to see the full audit reports for US-listed Chinese companies. So that's helping to support the index. And of course, it is way off its peak from back in early 2021. So it has ample scope to rally to at least unwind the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Then Twitter also popped on the upside in here. And that was on the back of Elon Musk taking a large position. I believe at least now that he is the largest shareholder in Twitter. So the share was up in a very dynamic manner, about 25%. And that suggests a low of at least near-term significance. Despite the fact that money supply is contracting, it's still at historically high levels. And there's still a lot of money floating around. So that's helping to support asset prices. But liquidity conditions are tightening, and the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market have been tightening or underperforming for a while. So we're seeing some short covering coming in right now. We're seeing banks underperforming, which is a warning signal. The advanced decline line has also unwound its oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. So now the question is, will it be able to push back above it like it did in 2019 and at the beginning of 2016? Those were important lows for the stock market. So if it can successfully push back above the 200-day moving average, well, then that would help to confirm, or at least it would be some evidence to suggest that the stock market is capable of putting in another advance prior to the beginning of the next recession. The continued outperformance of the commodity complex, that's also a late stage phenomenon. We often see that commodities take a really impressive bull run in the latter stages of a bull market. And this is taking place between the miners, the fertilizer companies, the steel companies. And that's generally a response to recovering growth and enthusiasm about future spending. And also, it's a hedge against inflationary pressures. And of course, that's also part of the reason why we have stocks that are doing well, because investors are looking for a hedge against inflation. Now, I did think that these were interesting charts, where you have the price to earnings ratio versus the USA is down to nearly 2.5 standard deviations. So this is European, or I guess it's world equities relative to the S&P 500, and then their dividend yield is back at highs not seen since 2008. So we've definitely seen a significant value discount coming through for European markets, and the Euro Stoxx index is also continuing to steady here, but it's trading on a much lower valuation overall. And we've seen a really impressive rebound come through for both European and UK indices. And the Japanese market is also taking some support through from the weakness of the currency. And the Nikkei is steadying now in the region of the 200-day moving average. As long as the Fangman shares are outperforming, then we're unlikely to see a mass migration into lower valued, or I guess companies with a lower valuation. It's when the Fangman shares begin to underperform the wider market on a sustained basis that will create demand for value. But we've had a really impressive rebound relative to the wider market. So we're definitely continuing to see this tightening breath because the advanced decline line hasn't quite yet been able to break back above the 200-day moving average. And this is certainly the desire to find a safe haven in stocks because they get to raise their prices. They've got strong moats. And this clear desire to get out of the bond market. The 3-month yield was up 3 basis points in here today. And it's continuing to just begin to price in the possibility of a 50 basis point interest rate hike a month from now. But it's certainly not going to lead the market, because when we look at the longer end of the curve, investors lose a lot more money at the long end of the curve per basis point move than they do at the short end. So even though they're guaranteed to lose money as yields rise, they'd much prefer to own shorter dated bonds. It therefore suggests that eventually the 3 month will catch up with the 10 year, but it is unlikely to do so ahead of interest rate hikes. And the stock market is going to remain sensitive to the interest rate hiking cycle. The last time that we had quantitative tightening and interest rate hikes at the same time, the stock market really struggled. And I think it's likely that we're going to have a similar condition on this occasion, despite the fact that we've had these impressive rebounds. But as long as those rebounds remain intact and we have an absence of downward dynamics, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Because at present, investors are more worried about getting a hedge from inflation and therefore buying into equities than they're worried about the slowing economy or the fact that inflationary pressures are still strong. Or perhaps that inflationary pressures might even moderate later this year. Oil prices were in positive territory today. Saudi Arabia is raising prices to Asia, and that certainly helped to support the price in here. So it's continuing to hold the $100 area. So as long as oil prices remain firm, that's going to act as a support for the wider commodity complex, considering that oil prices are instrumental in the production of just about everything else. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.